Blog Talk Radio.
Ah, stop that!
Yeah, really, get the right music on.
I want something different. Listen up, people, we got something interesting. Want some more.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
All right, Weekly Conservative Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And we got some blood boiling, some music running, some energy flowing.
Yeah, except that, you know, the one is still real busy.
Busy
Mama. Yeah.
Hey, you know,
huh?
I think this would be a really good weekend to go, like, to the beach.
Oh, yeah.
No, to the beach. I ought to go to the beach.
Which
this
beach?
Would be a really good weekend to remember why we're getting 3 days.
Yeah.
Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Really good day.
Actually, we have Mama's busy. Yeah, he's sending the gaffer.
He needs a break.
Yeah, I guess he does. He needs a big break. He needs like about a 3-year break.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I do not recall a president not laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown on Memorial Day. I don't remember.
Okay.
That.
Somebody has suggested there have been, in the last 30 years, 3 times that it hasn't happened.
Really?
3 times. And all 3 of those times were Republicans.
I think I'd like to maybe research that a little bit.
That was the reason. George Bush was attending more local memorial services rather than Arlington Cemetery service. His father was. What's his father doing? I think the same thing. And then Reagan was in the middle of a summit. And he sent George Bush Sr. to do it while he was gone. But I can tell you that all 3 of them were not on vacation.
Nope. Not on vacation in Chicago.
He wasn't busy.
Busy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, is this an affront? Is this an insult? Is this a calculated political screw you?
Oh, no. I'm not. I don't think it's calculated. I think he just doesn't give a shit.
No, I have an alternate theory.
Uh-huh. Okay.
He's scared of the military.
Yeah.
He might pick on him. Obama Pee Wee Herman doesn't want the big bad men with the guns anywhere near him.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Yeah, I mean, what was it that he supposedly said at West Point when he gave the graduating address there? Said, "I'm ultimately the boss." Yeah. Okay,
he's ultimately
fine.
Something.
Yeah.
He's ultimately something.
Yeah.
You know, the problem was the buck didn't stop with him anymore.
No. I don't think so.
Or if they
doesn't stop with the Gulf oil spill. Sure doesn't.
Well, I have to say this, and most of you are not going to pay. Most of you don't understand this, but I was in the military and I was stationed in Biloxi, Mississippi, back in the late 70s.
Uh-huh.
That was quite a long time ago. And
yeah.
I want to tell you that we were always amazed that the waters of the Gulf had a very fine oily sheen.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It wasn't anything significant, like you went into the water and came out with a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you did go into the water and you came out and you showered.
Huh. I didn't know that.
It was not something that you had to worry about. It was not something that you had problems with. Some of the back bay areas, the water was a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't swim back in the back bay areas. And the back bay is it's a salt water area, but it's much more stagnant. The water flows back into that area. It's about half mile to a mile inland in the back from the Biloxi, what do they call it? What was the name of that town? It was a Navy base, was over there. It wasn't clear, pristine water.
Okay.
No, and back in the late 70s, you're not talking about, 35,000 oil rigs either.
No, that's true.
So
didn't have to then.
Right. So it was something that was seemed to be somewhat natural to the Gulf. Most of the people that I met down there hardly even noticed it. So.
Huh.
But you could some people that were really really sensitive. You spend a lot of time in the water.
Come
out and rinse off.
I mean, darn.
So, I'm not suggesting that this particular situation that's going on down there now is not an absolute disaster.
Oh, absolutely.
But let's put a little bit of perspective on the idea that the Earth kind of, leaks pretty much everywhere on the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
As we talked about, I know it was last week or the week before. There's a trench off the California coast that is dead because of the amount of oil that leaks into that trench, deep water trench, the California coast.
Absolutely.
That's been going on for a long time. People say that if they actually started drilling over there, that would probably stop because it would the drilling
relieve
would
the pressure. Sure.
Relieve the pressure that is actually causing it to bubble up into these deep trenches. So, I'm not happy with what is going on in the sense that it is a disaster of pretty serious proportions. It is not like the world has come to an end and the Gulf is dead.
No, absolutely not.
You find, as a matter of fact, if they actually can get this thing stopped and we have a couple of good 3 or 4 hurricanes pop into the Gulf, then a significant part of the problem is going to be washed away.
Yes, it will.
So, they
probably only need a whole lot of rain.
I think they need some serious churning to go on.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
There we go.
But
let's talk about the government's response because beside the fact that Obama hasn't been down there yet, which I find to be absolutely stunning in his political, deaf ears in this situation. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the left is just giving him an absolute pass on it. I don't understand it at all. This is the place where he could be down there, lambasting the oil companies and cheering on the environmentalist wackos that are just going absolutely apeshit nuts.
Oh yeah. He can do that from the comfort of his office.
Yeah, but going down there is
he misses a great photo.
I just don't understand. Politically, it just doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Although he didn't go to Tennessee.
He never
flew over Tennessee.
Yeah, his unwillingness to come out of D.C. except for on his terms, to a very secure politically and emotionally place.
Mm-hmm.
It really indicates, and the fact that he's not done, what are we up to, 308 days since his last presser?
Oh, yeah, something like that. Something close to it.
The man is deeply, deeply locked into a bunker mentality.
Yep.
Nobody's creating this bunker mentality except for him. Because the left is like going, come on out, we'll be nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
and whenever
sure.
he's around, they're like, we'll be nice. So
exactly.
It's not like he's getting hammered by anybody left, right, and center that's forcing him to stay out of the thing. I just what is this? Carvo, Obama's been misled by advisors?
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Right.
What, you just saw that on Twitter?
They have to start making some kind of excuses at this point. Because even the left is kind of going, come out and play.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Let's see your face here.
The Gulf disaster is perfect for him. Perfect. He could be there. He could walk up and down the beaches. He could see the animals. He could talk to me. This is like, for the left, it's like, every day is a lost opportunity for the left to get him to do stuff. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yep.
It's beyond tone deaf. It's beyond political deafness. This is. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
At all?
No.
So.
No. In a word.
No. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the disaster itself. I find it rather interesting that they. I think what has happened is they had a plan for a disaster like this. And that plan needed to be implemented pretty much a couple days after things started, and that was it. And once that plan didn't get implemented and things started falling apart, the government and BP looked at each other and go, well, what now? And the government goes, well, you know better than anybody else how to deal with this, so go ahead and do it. And BP's mm-hmm. going like, well, that's fine and dandy, but, help. And the government's
yeah,
going
right.
like, but, to do what? And BP's going, I don't know.
I think both of them are
looking at each other like going, we don't know how to fix this. And the government's going like, we don't know how to fix it. You don't know how better to fix it. Well, help, okay? To do what? Well, we don't know, but... And I can literally see two people sitting off of some boat in New Orleans going like, what do you think we should do? I don't know. What do you think we should do? I don't know.
Who's on first?
Right now, that's why things are going on. And I'd be willing to cut the government some slack that it doesn't have a clue about what to do with this if it was actually trying to, do something. But it's just sitting there. It's not doing anything. I mean, even if you're throwing straw, which is I heard today, somebody's talking about throwing straw on the oil.
Oh, cool.
I'm saying like, okay, even if it's throwing straw on the oil, do something.
Yeah.
Jindal's having
anything.
Practical cows.
Yeah.
Jindal's like going, do do something. Let us do something. Can we do this? We'll do this. Can we do this? And the government's going, well, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I was liking Jindal's response. And it, which was basically, you know, guys, we're going to go do this anyway. I'm, you know, screw you. We're done playing around. We're going to go build our little sand barriers and that kind of stuff. And you all do what you want.
Yeah, and of course somebody will say, well, you didn't get approval from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to do that. Yeah.
Nope, sure didn't. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Jindal's got to do something, otherwise people are going to start looking at him going, hey.
Exactly.
Hey.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, he has to do something, you know.
Yep.
People are just going to have a thing. But, you know, it's not just New Orleans. It's not just Louisiana. You know,
No.
You know, Birmingham seems to be having, you know, a little bit of twitching going on. You know, and that's pretty far inland. I mean, it's on the waterway, so it's there. But, you know, I'm at the point where I kind of said, you know, I try everything.
Sure. I throw the bucket at it.
Because the Russians have a solution. The Russians have a solution, and they're ready and willing and able to help, and we have the tools if we're willing to do it. Obama absolutely positively will not do it that way.
Nope.
Do you know what I'm talking about? You know,
is that the nuke explosion on the thing?
Yeah. The Russians have done it twice. I think two times I'm aware of where they had bad ocean bottom blowouts, and they couldn't get a handle on it. So what they used was a small tactical nuke, and detonated it right at the seabed, and the detonation sealed the well.
Cool.
Of course, you know, then they had a small little problem with some radiation problems. But
what the hell?
Oil.
Yeah.
The oil leak stopped, and that was the intent, was to do that. Now, they've done it twice, which means they've actually figured out, okay, the first one wasn't the brightest way of doing it. The second one seemed to have been a smarter way of doing it with less, you know, problems, you know, long term. So, I that's certainly an option, and I think it's something that should be put on the table, but I think Obama would let this run spewing oil for the next 6 months. Destroying the Gulf Coast rather than actually do something like that that would actually solve the problem but give him all kinds of political problems.
Yep.
So, I this is where leadership is required, and there's no evidence whatsoever this man has an ounce of leadership in him.
Well, yeah. I mean, how many... when have you ever seen him exhibit leadership? Never.
He leads Michelle on the dance floor.
Okay. I will stand corrected.
He doesn't apparently step on our toes too much, so come on. Yeah, no, I haven't. There's none. I said it earlier on today. You know, the reason Barack Obama has plans for every crisis is because he has no clue how to handle the crisis itself.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. If he had a plan to do that, he would have trotted that puppy out.
We've done something. He's not doing anything.
Nope.
Absolutely nothing. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I'm going to shift gears a little bit more here.
Cool.
Because, in a lot of ways, I don't really blame Obama for what's going on.
Okay.
This is not the president's responsibility. You know, the buck may stop on his doorstep, you know, and he may not, you know, no one may like him. But the reality of the situation is, this is not Obama's problem. You know,
nope.
This is FEMA's problem. This is BP's problem. This is the state's problem. This is, you know, despite the fact that it's way offshore, this is something that he can't do much other than to point and say, fix. And that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm not going to hang him out to dry because of it. However, there are some other issues that I do want to hang around his neck, you know. And there's one that I spent some time reading about, and this is one that bothered me for a while. You may or may not, I'm pretty certain you recall, I don't know if everybody recalls, that an agent in the Afghan theater was meeting with his intelligence handlers on an Afghan base, and he turned out to be a suicide bomber and took out the entire intelligence cell that we had in that area of Afghanistan.
Oh, joy.
Happened about 2 months ago, 2-3 months ago. 8 were killed once. 7, agency intelligence people and one civilian intelligence person. And it was the head of that group that was part of that. So it just wiped out our intelligence cell in that part of Afghanistan because nobody cared to pay attention to the fact that this agent, just came and went whenever he wanted, and he came in one time with the, suicide vest and killed them all. All right. And I had a big problem with that. That's a lapse of intelligence in the intelligence community.
Absolutely.
It's a lapse of security protocols that just says, hey, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Come on, this is basic spy game 101. You got a mole out there, you don't know if he's been turned or not, at any one given point in time, protect yourself. All right, so it turns out about 4 weeks later, Taliban just went batshit crazy and attacked Agram Air Base in Kabul, the U.S. military base in Kabul. I mean, a big honking attack.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple suicide bombers, multiple, infiltrators. It was a serious attack. But it was only one of 3 attacks that went on in like a 1 week period. And I thought, man, they got the pressure off because now the intel is all gone, and now they can actually act. And they took advantage of that time and, went after it. Well, it turns out, I've read today, that we were not so blind as far as intel was concerned. And as a matter of fact, there was significant intelligence about all 3 of those attacks in advance with detail and specificity. And that intel was provided to the military and up the chain of command in advance of all 3 attacks.
Oops.
And nothing was done. Now, that bothers me.
A lot.
A lot. What's rather interesting is that we've just last week had a departure from the Obama administration. What was his name? Director of Intelligence.
Yep.
Just resigned last week, gone. Now, the question I have is, did it come back up to him as that he was the reason why that intelligence wasn't acted upon? Did he not provide it to, the White House or the Pentagon? It seems to suggest that the intelligence was actually given up both sides, both the intelligence side and the military side, and no action was taken by either one. So, I'm concerned by that. That suggests that a lot of our military in Afghanistan has been frozen in position as far as what they can do and what they can't do.
Yep.
And that means that there's more political screwing around with on-the-ground decisions, and that's never good. Not good,
never.
Not good.
Nope.
And You know, and I don't necessarily put the blame on Obama because he's too big an idiot when it comes to military things to understand the damage that that type of stuff can cause. But you know what? I am going to put it on Gates. You know, Director of Intelligence and Gates both should know better than that stuff. And, you know, that is a problem for me as far as that's concerned. The other thing that I want to hang around his neck in kind of a similar way is, I forgot.
Yeah.
It'll come back to me.
Okay.
Let's see. It was Afghan such. There's so many things to complain about him that are.
They all kind of run together. Yeah.
You know, but there are other things that are important. That concerns me as far as that is concerned. Let's talk about something that's near and dear to both our hearts.
Okay.
The economy.
Oh, boy.
I don't want to talk about our economy for the moment. Because there's every indication that the turn has happened and things are getting worse across the board.
Yep.
You're not a big movie fan.
No, I am not.
The movie 2012 came out on DVD to pay-per-view and stuff like that. It was pretty panned as far as when it was in the movies is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just not believable. The problem is this. When you're destroying the Earth, okay, lots of unbelievable things have to happen. Most people believe that it just can't happen. And 2012 is supposed to be pretty serious destruction of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
A long time ago, I started writing a book about a science fiction book about the first permanent presence on Mars. And one of my characters is a psychologist that her primary area of expertise is in large-scale disasters.
Cool.
And her particular point from most of her research, and I'll tell you why she's part of the group that's going to Mars. Her particular point in her research is that mega disasters never are a mega event. What they are a series of very small events that self-reinforce the direction that ultimately leads to what is a mega event. But it is a sequence of small events that at any point, if you just break the chain, you eliminate the possibility of a mega event.
Okay.
And one of the events that she studied was one of our first permanent underwater facilities that had an event where about 40% of the people died in a drill. It was a safety drill, and ended up 40% of the people, it was about 800 people on the facility, 40% of the people died because of some little things. They kept on having safety drills. And because the safety drills included escape bubbles that
mm-hmm.
would allow people to get into these bubbles and go to the surface to be safe, because it was such a big pain in the ass to do the bubbles, to retrieve the bubbles, they locked the bubbles down. And so when they were released, the tether went to a certain distance and then stopped.
Ah, okay.
But because of what they had done is they had scheduled a safety drill, and they did it when their three retrievers were being all serviced, and it took them 8 hours to get the retrievers done, and the bubbles only had 2 hours.
Oops.
Little stupid shit that put together ended up there. Deep water is one of those situations. Lots of little mistakes that added up to a big disaster.
Yes,
they were
did.
Sending her on this manned, you know, permanent station to Mars so that she could see these type of events happening and break the chain. Because, of course, once they got to Mars, it was a really long way to get help to them. So that was the desire to do it. My particular problem is that in the economy, the world economy, we are seeing lots of little micro events.
Yes, we are.
And these micro events are going to, if they're not, if there's no intervention, they're going to lead to something big and really bad. And I think too many people are, I think a lot of people that are really paying attention see where this is going. And the people that can actually do something about it don't.
Okay.
Europe is...
Well, we certainly have that going on now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, Europe is on the brink of a full-scale financial disaster.
Yep.
And, you know, there are certain people that are kind of going, you know, you got to step in, you know, you got to do something.
Yep.
And what they're doing is they're throwing a whole lot of fuel onto the fire.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you couple that with a number of other things that are happening, did you happen to see the Kurt Schiller graphs today?
No.
They came out today. Absolutely devastating. I mean, when you look at those graphs, what you see is an absolute, once again, downward spiral in the mortgage market. Just...
Oh, yeah, it's
I'm...
You know, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
From our perspective, from my client's perspective, from Victoria and I, you know, her office
yep.
and stuff like that,
yep.
There's no doubt that things that everybody expected things to turn with the spring and get a little bit better
mm-hmm.
with the spring
mm-hmm.
on there.
Yep.
It's going exactly the opposite direction, and it's going
yep.
the opposite direction hard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. California had an uptick in average price. The problem is sales are down. So even with an uptick in price, you don't have enough volume to make a difference.
Yeah, it's, you know, you and I have been talking about it for going on
long time.
Years.
Yeah.
years. That the problem is not liquidity.
No.
Not liquidity. You know, this is a solvency problem. And Europe is, you know, has just thrown $1 trillion, you
mm-hmm.
know, at not a liquidity problem, but a solvency problem, and you
mm-hmm.
know, it's a big black hole. That $1 trillion is useless and gone and irrelevant at this point.
Yep. Absolutely. And we're following along right behind it.
Thank you, Pammy. Dennis Blair, National
Oops.
Security Advisor. National Security Advisor, Director of Intelligence.
Yes, Director of DNI. Yep.
DNI. I started thinking about the fact, my problem was this. Gas prices are down about 20 cents here.
Really? Because they're up here.
We've gone from about mid-270s to the mid-250s.
Okay.
Now, going into Memorial Day weekend,
yeah.
Going into Memorial Day weekend, that's going in the wrong direction.
That's true.
Memorial Day weekend is always, you know, a little spike in oil, you know, gas prices.
Yep, absolutely.
So, going down 20 cents and Lundberg said today, if oil stays where it is, expect it to go down another 15 cents.
Except that, stop and think about this, though. We have a major oil producer in the Gulf that shut down. The Alaskan pipeline is now shut down. Apparently they had a leak of some undisclosed amount. So that's shut down. That should all put upward pressure on fuel.
Except for you have an entire 1,000 miles of beachfront that normally should have, you know, 15 million people descending on it.
That's
this
true.
Weekend, that's all but shut down. Now, nobody's going anywhere. I've talked to some people here in the Midwest. Wisconsin Dells is a very big, popular destination. Some of the largest water parks in the world are here. It's about an hour north of here. We go up there on a regular basis. They have, you know, this is a town of about 3,000 people, and there's 40,000 hotel rooms.
Oh, my God.
Okay? I mean, it's just, you know, nuts as far as, you know, people are concerned. And I know some people that work in the service industry on there, and they said, you know, they're not putting any overtime in this weekend.
Really?
And this is a big weekend. Now, weather here, I don't know what the weather is there. It was 91 here yesterday. It was 86 here today.
Oh, my goodness.
We're cooking. I love it, of course. Humidity is high. We've had thunderstorms popping up all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So the good weather for the Memorial Day weekend usually spells big bucks for the Memorial weekend here. They're not expecting it. Which is why I think oil prices are going in the direction they are, or gas prices are going in the direction they are, because people are simply just not going to travel.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you think things are going to get worse, you're not going to spend a whole lot of money on vacation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, I see, you know, this is the problem. We're both doing it. I think people have stopped paying attention to what they're being told about the economy. I think people have decided that, yeah, that's full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
We know better. It's getting a lot worse, and we're battening down the hatches again.
Hmm.
I think I'm seeing it everywhere. Except for the people that could be doing something as far as the economy is concerned, they're throwing money at it. You know, trying to prime a pump that right now isn't even turned on.
Yep. Yep. Well, and but you know, then you get back into okay, what are the monetary policies? What's the fiscal policies? And none of that is conducive to job creation, which is what we need.
Right.
Yeah. We've got, what, 20 million people out of work? 23 million people out of work? Well, out of work and underworked.
Right. You know, and it's not changing. So, you know, that's going to have, you know, little problems, little itty-bitty problems continuing going on. And this was the deal about the movie in 2012. There was lots of little things, you know, that were going on, you know, that were building up until when things went to hell in a handbasket, they went to hell in a handbasket big, bad, and worse than anybody expected.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you sit there and kind of go, you know, the magnitude of the impact of what could go wrong right now, you know, this is what I said to people that we saw on Friday, new clients. I said, the magnitude of what looks like is happening right now is going to make 2008 look like damn Mardi Gras.
Yep. Yep, yep.
Now, you and I have been saying it. We've been, you know, waiting for the shoe to drop. We've both agreed the shoe's dropped. The question is, when is it going to hit?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it will hit. I mean, at some point in time, it will hit. I mean, look at what the stock market has been doing this past week. you know.
They're all.
All of that takes liquidity out of the private sector.
I am really concerned. That's what it was.
Yep.
I'm really concerned with the fact that Victoria and I are getting ready to pick up roots and move in the next 30 days.
Yes, you are.
When, you know, it's just as easy as the shit could hit the fan in the next 30 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other section that I wanted to hang on Obama, somebody just reminding me, and they had nothing to do with reminding me, is Arizona.
Oh, boy.
Rightly so, the Obama administration is getting its head handed to itself by this claim that the Arizona law is all these bad things, and of course, they haven't read anything.
Of course not.
So
there's a very nice video out on that, by the way.
I want to see that. Good.
I mean, you know, basically it's put out by Arizona, and it's got this little frog, and it says, you know, reading is your friend.
And talk about tweaking, you know.
Yeah.
Brewer is just having so much fun with them.
Yes, she is.
He supposedly, they're going to send 1,200 troops to the border in Arizona. Why?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Administrative duties, maybe.
If there is not a problem in Arizona, and the governor of Arizona has blown the problem way out of proportion, why are they sending 1,200 troops to the border?
Exactly. If there's no problem, why send them? If there is a problem, 1,200 doesn't cut the mustard.
Wow. 1,200 is a lot of troops to be thrown on the border. Yeah, I agree. It's not enough to actually secure the border.
Nope.
But, you know, I would expect Obama to throw, you know, 100 or 200 at it and say, see, I'm doing something. 1,200 is a big number for him.
Well, it's a big number for him, but it's not a big enough number to do anything.
But it's a big number for him.
Okay.
The thing is, if there wasn't a problem, and he throws a big number at the problem,
mm-hmm.
What does that say about his point of view about the problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. No, I agree about that. All I'm saying is, if you want to have an effect, you don't send 1,200 people. I mean, that's basically, what, six companies?
Well, here's the other problem. In
you
Afghanistan,
send a damn regiment.
In Afghanistan, right now, there's a whole section of Afghanistan where they're not allowed to patrol locked and loaded.
Yep, I saw that. Got to have a round.
They're not allowed in a combat zone where they come under fire all the time, and they're not allowed to be locked and loaded. And for those of you who don't know, chambered round, safety off. So when you get shot at, you pick up, pull trigger, gun goes off.
Yep.
You know, they have to be, you know, release safety, cock, shoot. At that point, you know, automatic weapons have dumped 1,000 rounds at you.
Exactly. That's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy.
So my problem is, if he sends 1,200 troops to the border, you can bet they're not going to be locked and loaded.
They may not even have any rounds. They may not even have any clips in their rifles.
Right. They may not be allowed to be carrying open arms.
That's true.
Well, okay. As far as I'm concerned, you know, somebody crossing the border, you can just shoot to kill.
Absolutely.
I don't have a problem with that.
Nope.
You know, and of course, somebody says, "Well, they're women and children."
Yeah, well, okay.
Okay, after about three of those, there'll be a whole lot less women and children.
Yes, there will.
You know,
yep.
Which is a good thing. you know, a lot less women and children running in there. Crossing the desert in the summer? Yeah, I'm thinking that's not a good idea to begin with.
Yeah, for anybody, let alone women and children.
Last thing on the Euro market.
Mm-hmm.
Late next week or the beginning of the following week is when most of the rest of the governments are going to have to vote on the bailout that they projected 2 weeks ago, proposed 2 weeks ago. I think as the summer progresses, we're going to see a lot more disturbances and riots in those countries. You know, France is moving towards, you know, changing their work week. That's going to cause all kinds
mm-hmm.
of problems.
Mm-hmm.
We need one really good heat wave coming across the European continent while this is going on, and I think that stuff's not going to be good at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we've got another month of dragging our, you know, dragging the heels. Could, might be. We're a month away from, April, May, June. So we're only a month into this quarter. No, we're 2 months into this quarter. We're coming up on 2 months into this quarter. We won't know until the end of July. We're 2 months into the quarter. I got a sneaking suspicion we're going to have a negative quarter. We should have a negative quarter, in my opinion.
Should have, yeah.
Should have a negative quarter in there. That's going to really set all kinds of things going crazy.
Yep.
They will blame it on the Gulf.
Yep.
That works just as good as anything, you know, if you're going to come up with some kind of excuse. Next 30 days could be rather interesting. All right, let's talk about, this doesn't necessarily apply to everybody. I'm going to get a little bit personal, TMI, not too much. Victoria had surgery on Thursday.
Yes, she did.
Her eye.
Yes.
And you
had a tense weekend.
Tense weekend. The surgery was actually two different surgeries. The first one was to remove a cataract. Pretty straightforward, not a big deal. Remove the cataract, put in a fresh lens. Lots of people have it. Diabetics have glaucoma. Glaucoma causes cataracts. Cataracts get yanked out. They throw in a lens.
Yep.
It works for a while.
Yep.
Pretty straightforward. The second one is also primarily caused because of diabetes. Most people don't understand what it is. Most people know about cataracts and stuff like that. And even maybe even glaucoma if you've been any exposed to it at all. The second one is called a vitrectomy. And you and I actually talked about this when she had this happen a year ago on her other eye. A vitrectomy is the liquid that is in your eye is called the vitreous humor.
Yes.
It's not quite gel-like, but it's pretty close to it.
Yep.
And in diabetics, what happens is the back of the eye creates additional blood vessels that leak, just like oil in the Gulf.
Oh, wow.
And the way that doctors stop that leaking of blood into the eye is they use laser treatments and they cauterize the openings, and that stops the leak. It can be 1,000 laser pulses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Seal an eye well enough to stop the bleeding. Well, the problem is, once the blood gets in the eye, it's kind of hard for the body to get rid of it. And so that you guys all understand what it is, every one of us have these. You ever close your eye and see a little something floating in your vision?
Yep, little floaters.
Little floaters.
Yep.
Okay. Well, now imagine that there's enough to block about 40 or 50% of your vision. Okay, that's what happens to diabetics that have retinopathy and have lots of blood pouring in there. The idea of the vitreous humor is to take all the fluid out, clears out all the old blood. They replace it with saline, just plain salt water. And what happens is over time, the body absorbs the saline and produces new vitreous humor. It takes about 3 months for the process to complete. Okay, in the meantime, the eye is clear. No more blood in there. makes it easier for them to do other work on there, gives better vision.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, the pressure in the eye can fluctuate wildly, and that's what happened to Victoria. After the surgery, everything seemed to be fine. We came home, and about an hour later, she started feeling nauseated, and then blood started coming from her nose. She was in a lot of pain. We left to go back to the clinic. She started throwing up.
Oops.
This was all pain-oriented because of the pressure in the eye, which had absolutely skyrocketed. We spent the next 7 hours at the clinic where they did 4 procedures to try and reduce the pressure in the eye. And how they reduce the pressure is they stick a needle in there and draw fluid out. But her eye was responding very quickly. Now, something that I thought was rather interesting. Vitreous humor has a specific density. And saline doesn't have that density. Now, I don't know how much you know about engineering, but I spent 2 years working for the technical editor of a technical journal called Journal of Pressure Vessel Technology. And one of the rather interesting things is that flow meters, pressure flow meters, can determine the density of the fluid that's passing through them.
Mm-hmm.
And if
okay.
the density is wrong, they can change the level, the flow, you know, to correct for the density. And I'm thinking, that's a rather interesting mechanical thing. I'm thinking, doesn't the body have that kind of sensor in it? And if the specific density is changed, might it not be trying to throw extra fluid into the eye? Now, all this is running through my head a year ago.
Yeah.
And the same doctor is doing this again, and we're having the same problem. All right. We went home Thursday night. It was really, really not a good Thursday night, although Victoria slept, which was good. She was in a lot of pain on Friday. We went back to the clinic. Lots of different meds. It was a very tense weekend because, you know, we didn't know if it would blow up over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
She's been back
mm-hmm.
to the doctor today. Doctors are happy. I'm not. Pressure's there. The whole thing was meant to bring up the following thing. The doctor that was working to relieve the pressure was actually the doctor that did the cataract surgery, not the vitreous humor, because he was still in other surgeries. Okay? So it was the cataract doctor that was trying to reduce the pressure. And that's okay, because it's pressure that causes the cataracts to form to begin with. So it's something that she's well familiar with.
Uh-huh.
But we haven't spent a lot of time talking to her. We probably had about 3 or 4 appointments before the surgery. And I was just always in the room making some comments, but for the most part being quiet during these meetings. But I was not so quiet on Thursday. And she turned to me and she goes, you know, what should we call you? And I said, bitch.
Yeah.
I got that.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's pretty much where they left it. And I told her, and we actually saw the vitreous humor doctor on Friday, and I told him that. I said, you are really, really lucky you were in the operating room all day yesterday, because if you had come out, he goes, we're fixing it. We're fixing it. And I said, that's not good enough. Not good enough. Okay. Barack Obama, not good enough.
Yep. Yep.
Europeans, not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, fixing the problem is not good enough. Stop the problem before it becomes a problem.
Huh.
You know?
Yep.
And it appears that a whole lot of inspections and stupid things happened in the Gulf of Mexico on that rig that have led to where we are. There's a whole lot of stupidity going on in our economy right now, both in Europe and in this country, and
yep.
they're doing things that are stupid.
Yes,
I don't know why. I don't know why. I have to suggest to you that it's all political, but, frankly, I'm a bitch. I understand that. And I'm arrogant. I'm a pretty smart bitch. But, you know, I don't think I'm the smartest bitch on the country.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But I'm being proved wrong over and over again. You know.
Yeah. Here's the deal for me. If you are ever in doubt, follow the money. I mean, just follow the money. Where is the money going? We lost, I don't know what, a 1,000 points in the Dow. That represents, what, something close to $1 trillion. Not quite, but something close to that. Where did that money go? Who was on the winning end of those bets? Because that's what they are. I mean, you know, you're betting that if you're the average investor, you're betting that the Dow is going to go up. Somebody else is betting that it's going to go down.
Well, you know,
who's the winner?
Here's my problem, and I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
Here's my problem. You know, but people make a whole lot of money when things are going good than when things are going bad. Now, there's lots of people that make money when things are going bad.
Yep.
But even those people make a lot more money when things are going good.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. You know what? I'm almost afraid at this point to believe the idea that it's just money. Okay? Because there's a whole lot of stupid going on, and you know, and it's bad stupid. It's bad stupid.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Well, for the average person, it's bad stupid. Yes, it is.
Because what you're getting is somebody is saying, you know, here, I'll give you $1,000 if you give me the sink, you know, if you give me the life raft that has a big hole in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the person selling the life raft's going like, okay, that's great. So give me the $1,000. They give you the big life raft. You throw it in the water. You jump into it, and they go ha ha ha. Except for they're still on the sinking ship.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
You know, it's like people on the Titanic paying people to get into the life raft.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's what I think is going on as far as Washington is concerned. Is they're on a sinking boat, and they're charging everybody to get off the boat. And thinking they're smart in the process.
Well, I'm... that, you know, that may be. Here's the only thing that I'm saying. Somebody's making money. If you figure that out, if you figure out who that is, then you can start figuring out motive. But until then, you know, you're sitting there guessing like the rest of us.
You know, I'm sorry. I understand the motive. Sorry about that, people.
Yeah.
I understand the motive of the executives in BP and Halliburton and the South Korean company, you know,
yep,
for doing the things they did. I understand that. You know, there's a profit motive there, and I certainly understand that. Ollie? Damn dog. But, you know, that doesn't explain the politician side of it. It really doesn't.
Well, no. You know, but I think we're dealing with two separate problems here. You know, one is
problem and how to fix it.
Well, one is where'd the money go? Who got it? That explains the financial motive. The political motive is power. I mean, that's plain and simple. It's look at all of the legislation that has come down. Every last stinking bit of it. It isn't designed to cure the talked about problem. It's designed to put more power in the hands of those politicians.
Okay. We got 30 seconds left. We're going to have
okay. Just me, Pammy, Mama Gurkha, Arkansas Traveler, Hallie 5, thanks for tuning in. And we'll talk to you all next week.
And for those of you that can listen on the podcast, you know, Green Room will be in 10 seconds.
Cool.
We'll continue on there. Yeah. And I send this last piece out to you. Do you know who that is, by the way?
No, I don't. Who is it?
Jethro Tull.
Really? How cool!
I've been in the mood for some Tull lately, and I finally got a CD with some Tull stuff. Some originals, some of their top ones live.
Wow.
So I've been enjoying that. I've been playing it pretty a lot for the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoying it.
That's cool.
Okay. You want to follow the money.
Well, I think that's only half of it. I mean, I think that's the financial side of it. I don't think that that's the political side of it. The political side of it, I think, is about power. Pure and simple.
You know, but here's the problem. And this is, you know what? I'd agree with you. I would agree with you.
Yeah?
Okay. Except for, you know, one little problem.
Hmm.
Everything that Obama's doing,
yeah,
politically, is turning to shit.
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I think it depends on who you're talking about. If you talk about the presidency, he's got another, 2.5 years to go. So he can afford to play a waiting game. Congress, on the other hand, a third of the Senate and all of the House of Representatives have only got until November. So their time constraints are totally different.
Well, politically, the House is in, Democrats are in deep doo-doo, and frankly,
yep,
the Republicans have not endeared themselves to me at all. I know they haven't endeared themselves to you very well either.
Nope, me either.
The chattering classes, I have spent a whole lot of chattering. You know, maybe I would like to tell you that I feel like I've been out of touch for the last 10 days. I had a lot of work to do, and I was doing a lot of work and stuff like that. And it feels like a whole lot of nothing has been going on. But when I look and I dig into my reading and stuff like that, I don't think I've been that out of touch. It is, in fact, a whole lot of nothing has been going on. You know, there's little things here, little flare-ups here, but it just seems to be like everybody's kind of going like, we can get to Memorial Day weekend, we can take 3 days off.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like it's been that way for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, if we can just make it to Memorial Day, we can get a couple of days off and we can relax.
Yeah. Well, I'm... I guess I'm sitting here saying that other than a defensive action, that's what we've got until November. Now, how good is that defensive action? I've got absolutely no idea. The financial regulation is halfway there. Cap and tax is probably on the table and will be brought up before November. When you couple that with everything that's gone before, that's not looking real swell. You know, it isn't. So, if that's the case, then defensive action is all we've got.
I'm inclined If I was a doomsayer,
yeah,
I would buy one of those big poster boards and write on it, and then go stand out on the corner. The end is near.
The end is near. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I really can't. I can't imagine that what is going on right now can persist for another 2 or 3 years.
No. No. Absolutely not.
You know,
no.
This is... You know, as far as I'm concerned, the economy is hanging by three fingers on a branch that's pulling out by the roots off a cliff.
Yep, absolutely. You won't get any argument from me on that one.
And Obama's standing at the top of the cliff, jumping up and down.
Yeah. Yep. You know.
Europe is doing worse. They're digging off the top of the cliff.
Yeah, right. and throwing rocks at us. You know, it's just.
Yeah.
I know.
Things are not making sense to me, Bill.
I understand. Here's my take on all of that. Politically, it's now or never for the liberal progressives. They either get it done now or they're dead for a generation. And I think they know that. And so consequently, they're going to do whatever they can do to make that happen. Is that going to be good for us? Absolutely not. The wild cards are this. How effective a defense can we in fact play? And two, what does the economy do? My bet is the economy screws them up. Now, that may be a crisis that's too good to waste. We see that already with BP. We see that already with the financial regulation stuff. So it becomes a question of what's the trajectory of the economy versus what's the trajectory of the legislation.
Well, it's clear to me what the trajectory of the economy is.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And, you know, even the people that I'm reading have reached a point where they're just throwing their hands up and going, this is a train wreck, you know, this is a train coming downhill, the bridge is out, and,
yep,
and everybody's cheering.
Absolutely.
Watching and cheering.
Yep.
You know, nobody's telling the conductor, you know, stop.
Yeah, right. Put on the brakes. Put it in reverse. Do something.
Do something.
Yeah, exactly.
Obama's busy.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? He doesn't have control of the legislative process. I mean, I think by design, but maybe not. It may be he doesn't know how to do that. So we'll see.
Well, it's certain that he doesn't know how to do that.
No. Yep. I agree.
You know, I think, you know, and this drives me crazy because, well, you know, I always think that there are smart people in the world. You know, and a lot of them get to be, you know, in the political class.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is, they're not acting smart. They're not. You know, even an objective point of view, they're not acting smart.
Exactly.
And it just, like I said, it just doesn't make any sense. It's making less and less sense to me because the only way I can look at it is that they're trying to make it happen.
Well, I'm, you know, here's... And this comes directly from Ayn Rand, and you know, take that for what it's worth. But one of her characters says, if things aren't happening as you think they should, check your premises. Now, your premise is these are logical, smart people that should be working for the good of the country. If that premise is incorrect, then where are you?
No, I don't believe that the left operates on the premise that they want the country to improve. I don't. I assume that what they want is they don't believe that anything is working well, that anything is good, that all of it is bad, and it all needs to be changed, and it all needs to be fixed, because no matter how beneficial it might appear to anybody else, it is, in fact, really, really bad because, you know, there are 3 homeless people.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So, as long as there are 3 homeless people, the whole thing is corrupt and wrong, and, you know, so it all has to be changed and fixed.
Yep.
You know, so I don't operate under that premise. But it appears to me what they've done, and this is, you know, is the left right now is trying to do a coup d'etat, you know, for the captain of the Titanic. And that doesn't make any sense.
Well, except that I agree with you, except that I think that they don't believe that. I think that they believe that they can pull it back from the brink once they have what they want.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I'd be willing to bet they believe that.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Let's head off the nuclear bomb. We can contain it.
Exactly. They're wrong, but that's what they think.
I saw somebody, I don't know if it was actual poll, somebody had done something that said that like 85% of people in the Beltway believe that the government can fix what's wrong, and 92% of the people outside of the government go, not a chance in hell.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
You know.
Exactly.
You know. The government can't fix what's wrong. You know, the government could fix what's wrong, you know, in the Gulf. They simply don't have the political will to do that.
Yep, I agree.
Nobody wants, you and I both agree, nobody wants to take the hit that is necessary in the economy to make things right.
That's
nobody
true.
Nobody is. Absolutely, yep. Nobody is. And not even the people on our side are willing to do that. You know, there's like 12 people in the whole country that are going, let it go to hell!
Yeah, right.
That's what needs to happen in order for things to get fixed.
Well, of course.
Let it go to hell!
Yeah. You know, they've got the thing mucked up enough now that may be the only solution that there is you say, okay. I mean, it's kind of a variation on the who is John Galt thing, which is, you guys have got this thing so mucked up, go ahead, muck it all the way up. Get it done so that the rest of us can take it over and make it right. Rebuild it. Make it work.
Well, that was certainly my and your argument was that, you know, if you give the left plenty of room, you know, and give them all the power that they've asked for and desired for,
yep,
that, you know, they will destroy liberalism all by them lonesome.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
they will. I mean, you know, the question is, do they destroy liberalism before they destroy everything else? And at this point, I don't think it matters.
It doesn't matter to me.
No, you know, it's like, okay, you got it mucked up, folks. Bad on you, and go ahead and finish her up.
Well, on Thursday.
Yeah.
Dum, da, dum, dum, dum.
Yeah. Thursday. What happens Thursday?
Thursday is our court hearing.
Uh-huh.
On our first mortgage.
Uh-huh.
And we find out if a judge is going to agree with us that the mortgage holder is up Schitt's Creek.
Oh, really?
Kind of hoping. We'll find out.
And your argument is what?
The first mortgage holder does not hold the note.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, they haven't been able to come up with a note.
Really?
So the first mortgage holder is trying to collect on the mortgage. They don't have the note.
Huh.
No note, no evidence of the debt. No evidence of the debt, no standing to collect.
Whoa. You know, you have tried to explain that before to me.
Okay.
And I have never, and frankly, I have not understood it because I know how our mortgage department worked.
Okay.
And we always
you probably
had a
note. You probably had two, you probably have a mortgage.
Well, I don't personally, but yeah.
Yeah. California probably functions, I think the end result is the mortgage company, the lender gives you a mortgage.
Yep.
You give the mortgage lender a note.
And a deed of trust.
And a deed in trust.
Right.
Okay. It is a single transaction with cross documentation. Here's the money. Here's our promise to pay you back.
Yep.
And in the event we don't pay you back, here's the deed that says you get the property.
Yep.
Okay. Now, we don't have deeds of trust here.
Okay.
The warranty deed, we have warranty deeds, and the warranty deed remains in the hands and the name of the buyer. Okay. So when you buy a property, the deed is put into your name, it's your property, that doesn't change.
Okay.
Mortgage that you, that is given to you is the lender saying, here's the money to buy the property. And the
mm-hmm.
note is you giving the note to the lender saying, I'll pay it back. And in the event that I don't, you get to take the mortgage, you know, to the court and take the property. So our mortgages here in Wisconsin include what you have as a deed of trust. It's
okay.
A right, it's a right to claim against the property.
Yep.
Okay. Problem is this. In your state, in our state, all three documents are part of a single transaction.
Yes.
Okay. And when things go to hell in a handbasket, you kind of need all three documents, in our case two documents, in order to proceed.
Right.
Because what happens is, you know, there has to be evidence of a debt. And in both cases, that evidence of the debt is the note.
Right.
The security is the mortgage.
Right.
The mortgage is what is used to go after the property in the event that debt's not paid.
Yep, I understand that.
Okay. The person that goes at that takes the mortgage to the court and says, we're not getting paid, the first thing the court says is, who are you?
Yeah, right.
And they say, well, we have the mortgage. Uh-huh. What do you mean you're not getting paid? Well, we should be getting paid, okay? Show me evidence that you should be getting paid. And that evidence is the
note.
You don't have the note. You don't have evidence that you should be getting paid. You can make arguments that you've been paid, and now you're not being paid anymore. But absent that note, you don't have any proof that you're the one that should be getting paid.
Okay.
And if you can't prove that you're the one that should be getting paid, you can't prove that you're not getting paid.
Okay. I understand all of that, but here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't the person that has the mortgage, in my case, a deed of trust, why don't they also have the note?
They should. It's an important document.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. Why don't they?
Good question. Now, what happened was our original lender was IndyMac Bank.
Uh-huh.
When we purchased the property, actually when we refinanced the property,
mm-hmm.
We took out a first and a second mortgage.
Okay.
IndyMac Bank was the lender for both of them. When IndyMac failed, the mortgage was transferred. It's called an assignment of mortgage. The mortgage was assigned to One West Bank, who took over for IndyMac Bank.
Which means
but we don't know what happened to the note. What should have happened with the note is that IndyMac Bank signed over the note to One West Bank.
Yep.
That might have happened, but we don't know that it did. Here's what we do know. The second mortgage remains in the name of IndyMac Bank, even though IndyMac Bank doesn't exist anymore.
Hmm.
But the note for the second mortgage was sold. It was sold to Citibank. And then Citibank sold it to City Mortgage. And on the note is, in fact, sold without recourse to Citibank and sold without recourse to City Mortgage. It specifies on the note who is, in fact, the holder of the note.
Right.
Okay. So theoretically, you might suggest that the first mortgage note had a similar pedigree, that, in fact, it was sold to somebody. Whom? We don't know. But what makes it rather interesting is that City Mortgage has instituted a lawsuit against us to collect on the second mortgage.
Hmm.
Now, you might ask, well, that seems to be perfectly okay. Well, under what basis? Because the mortgage is not in City Mortgage's name. The mortgage is, in fact, in IndyMac's name. City Mortgage doesn't own the mortgage. And only the mortgage is what gives them the right to go into Wisconsin to collect.
Exactly. Well, no.
They have to know.
No. They can collect. What they can't do is move against the property.
Now, that's a rather interesting point of view. Because the note absolutely references, and I know this for a fact, the note absolutely references the mortgage as the security instrument.
Yeah.
So it is the mortgage that allows them to do anything.
No, not really. You can lose or give up your security and still have a valid note.
You're perfectly correct.
Yep.
Okay, you're perfectly correct. Here's the problem. What happens if a second mortgage, the owner of the second mortgage, not the note, second mortgage,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
shows up after the note holder has collected?
They got a problem.
What we have is we have two transactions and four parties on the other side.
Hmm.
We have two note holders and two mortgage holders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the court can only allow one mortgage holder and one note holder to exercise. Which ones does the court say you get to and you don't?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the court can't make that decision. Because both have equal claims.
No, one's senior in time.
Well, we're talking about the first mortgage holder versus the second mortgage holder.
Right.
Okay.
But the second mortgage holder is junior in time.
That's correct. But
mm-hmm.
in both cases, there is a mortgage holder and a separate note holder. As a general rule in the state of Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
when you separate the note and the mortgage,
yeah,
legally separate the two of them, Mm-hmm. You can't put them back together again. And once they're separated, neither party can collect because neither party has standing that's been perfected in front of the court. Because there are two parties that have standing, and neither one of them has the full authority of to stand in front of the court and collect.
Okay.
And if the court gives on one, then theoretically the other one can come after us. And you could actually end up with us being sued by four different people for two transactions.
For the same amount.
For the same amount.
Yeah.
And the court can't allow that.
No. I guess the part that I don't comprehend is if I have a note and a mortgage, in your case, deed of trust in my case, and I sell them to somebody, I deliver to whoever that somebody is the note and the mortgage or the note and the deed of trust.
Correct.
They in turn give me the money.
Correct.
They are now in possession of both the note and the mortgage, or the note and the deed of trust. What I'm trying to figure out is, where did that break down in your case?
Well, the place where it broke down is when, and then there's two parts to this. You're right. If the lender, the original lender, had the note and the mortgage was in their name, if they wanted to, you know, get out of the process, then what they do is they assign the mortgage to somebody else, and
along with the note,
sell them the note.
Yes.
So
yes.
The note becomes the collateral, the security instrument, but it's the mortgage that gives them the right to do anything with it.
Okay.
Okay. And that process is pretty straightforward. It's a simple assignment. It doesn't require any other signatures. It's just, you know, the original lender, you know, assigns the mortgage to the other lender. Both of them sign it, and they record it, and it's transferred.
Yep.
They don't even have to pay for it. The transfer is a simple single-page document filed with the recorder of deeds in the county that the property exists on. The mortgage, however, is a security instrument, and there is a cash transaction that's involved there.
Right.
Okay. So it is a two-step process for them: one, to show that the process has occurred, and two, you know, collect the money. For whatever reasons, and it's happening all over the country, the note. And I've always wondered about this. When I became a real estate agent in Wisconsin, I wondered about it. I've asked attorneys about it. Why is not the note recorded? The note is not recorded. It is like a coupon on a bond. You know, you hold the coupon, you get to collect. No coupon, no collect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the problem that the first mortgage holder has right now is they might have the mortgage, but they don't have the note. They don't have standing to stand in front of the court and say, we should get paid. The court goes, prove it, and they can't. What happened to that note, we don't know. It's something that certainly should have been an important document kept with the file, but it is apparently lost. When IndyMac Bank went under, you know, they didn't have an orderly transfer of documents. Well, they may have, and it might be sitting in a box somewhere in some warehouse, you know, God knows where, along with a million other notes.
Yep.
And here's the deal. This is the deal. All the mortgage company has to do is they go to file their foreclosure, and if we did nothing. If we ignored it, and the mortgage company got a judgment against us in the foreclosure, in Wisconsin, that judgment replaces the note. So if we allowed it to default, Later on, we couldn't come back and say they didn't have the note because the judgment is prima facie evidence of the note.
Sure.
It's a way for them to get around the fact that the note's gone. But because we argued against it and we're going to make them put up with it, they don't get that default. They have to actually prove it. And that puts them in a hard spot. And if the court rules in our favor on Thursday, if they dismiss foreclosure because of lack of standing, we're going to ask for a dismissal with prejudice. If it's dismissed with prejudice, they can never come back.
Yep.
And that means that we never have to pay the mortgage. Now, the funny thing about that is it doesn't mean that the mortgage is gone. It just means that it's not collectible. It muddies the title of the property. Can't get title insurance in that situation. So, then you have to go to court and ask for what is called a quiet title action.
Right.
And then everybody has to get their chance to make their arguments why they should still have, you know, a lien against the property, and if they can't, present a solid argument to the court why they should still have a lien, the court can void their lien and issue a clean title. That's a step that has to go down. That's down the path. The second mortgage holder is in a slightly worse position, I think. Yes, they can go after us on the note, but because they, in fact, we can. Right now, the first mortgage holder, we don't know where the note is. It's missing.
Yeah.
Okay. In the second mortgage, we absolutely can prove where the note is and that the note holder doesn't hold the mortgage.
Yeah. Jesus.
Because the mortgage is still in IndyMac's name. And here's the screwy thing. Because they have now filed their action, okay, and the note is without recourse, they cannot go back to IndyMac Bank and have the mortgage transferred to their name. Because, drum roll please, there is no IndyMac Bank.
Yeah.
And because the note was sold without recourse, The note holder cannot go and force IndyMac Bank, which doesn't exist, to do something to resolve their problem. Second mortgage holders is in worse, although because it has the note, it could literally go after us and ignore the property. But Wisconsin's pretty firm about the fact, you know, gotta have the note, gotta have the mortgage. You know, you can ignore the mortgage and go after us separately, you know, but if you go after us, your mortgage is worthless. Because what then becomes the issue is that there's a judgment against you, you know, and that judgment becomes the sole claim against you. In this particular case, they can't do that. You know, they can get a judgment against us on the second note, but it doesn't extinguish the first mortgage, the second mortgage, because they don't hold the second mortgage, which means we would be susceptible to a claim by the second mortgage holder. And again, the court can't put that situation where we would be susceptible to the same claim to two different parties for the same amount. Once they separate the note and the mortgage legally in Wisconsin, they're dead. And we can't prove it in the first mortgage holder's case, but by forcing them to do so, by forcing them into court to prove that they hold it, we've called their bluff. The second mortgage holder is dead, absolutely dead. And that's why we've made our response to them, and they haven't pursued it any further than that. It's been now sitting for 45 days, and they've done nothing. Because now they know that they're in trouble.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, they actually have to go in and prove, they have to do the same thing. They have to prove that, you know, that they hold both, and they can't do that.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting?
And, of course, if all of that works out in our favor, the big one being Thursday, if it all works out in our favor, then what happens is First Mortgage gets wiped out.
Hmm.
That's $250,000.
Sure is.
So we'll
see. Wow.
And by the way, courts all over the country are throwing foreclosures out left, right, and center because of this.
Huh. That's just incredibly sloppy record keeping. I can't even fathom that.
It is. And part of the problem is that, you know, these mortgages and notes have been sold and sliced and diced and sold so many times that they've, you know, that they didn't worry about it, because once, of course, it's sold and they reissue new mortgage and note, what happened with the old one is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, people that are being foreclosed on just walk away.
Sure.
And so a default judgment is granted, and again, the issue becomes moot once the judgment is granted. But when somebody fights it and makes them actually stand up and present all the evidence,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, that's when they're in trouble because they can't. You know, for most places, that window of opportunity is 20 days.
Hmm.
You have 20 days in order to act. You don't act within those 20 days.
Yeah, right. Too bad.
You're dead,
so
and the mortgage company has gotten away with it.
Yep.
And when you're talking about, you know, 10 or 20 cases out of a million, mortgage company doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing is, they don't care.
Yep.
You know, cost of doing business.
Yep.
So, you know, we'll see. First one is Thursday. We win on Thursday. Then we're 25% of the way to having a house free and clear. And it's a big 25% of the way.
Oh, yeah. Although that could screw up your timetable some, because now you got to be there to take care of biz.
No, actually, because, you know, at that particular point, once the first mortgage holder can't do anything about it, then all we have to do is go ahead and rent the place.
Ah.
And we can rent the place, and, you know, we don't have to pay the mortgage. They can't collect on it. We don't have to pay on it. You know, we may not be able to sell it, but that's irrelevant if we've got somebody in here renting.
That's true. That's true.
And then the process can continue to go on its merry way. It will probably take 2 to 3 years to get a quiet title action done.
Yeah, but I mean, who cares?
Right. Right. In two to 3 years, things should start turning around economy-wise, too.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe.
Now, in the meantime, the rent will pay the taxes and insurance and give us a little bit of income on top.
Yep. Well, we can hope that works.
Yep. Like I said, this type of situation is happening all over the country. We've been trying to find evidence that it's happening here in Dane County in Wisconsin. We haven't been able to. I don't think we're the first, but we might be.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
All right.
Cool.
Let's call an end to this.
Okay. Super.
Little episodes.
Yeah. All righty. Cool.
And I will talk to you next week. I'll talk to you between now and then so that you find out what happens.
Hey, there you go. You bet. I want to know.
All right, everybody. Have a good week. Phil, you have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
You too. All righty. Night now.
Good night, everybody.